Here on Gadget Lab, we dive deep into the tech universe, tackling questions like, is giving companies access to your genetic material a good idea? And are the latest phone releases really that different than the last ones? We want to help you make informed decisions about what is worth your attention. And here's something that is undeniably worth your time, a digital subscription to Wired. Lucky for you, we are giving Gadget Lab listeners an exclusive discount, 20% off an annual subscription to Wired. Just visit wired.com and use the promo code GL20 to get 20% off a digital subscription. Use GL20 to get exclusive access to stories on the latest innovations like AI, deepfakes, and VR, as well as today's most talked about people in technology.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Lauren.
Mike.
Should I buy a face computer?
Which one?
Any face computer.
Any face computer. I thought we were talking about a very specific one this week.
Well, we are, but I'm not sure I can afford it. So I'm trying to figure out if it's like worth the money. Do I need a face computer?
Is there a new very expensive face computer out?
There is, yes.
I don't know if you need one. What do you think that you would use it for?
I would say that I would probably do Zooms and hang out on Slack, and type in Google Docs.
Wow, the future is very sexy. I don't know. I think that we should probably bring in another person to ask them for their advice.
Okay. I do expect an answer by the end of the show.
Okay.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Gadget Lab. I am Michael Calori. I'm the Director of Consumer Tech and Culture at Wired.
Still loving that title.
It's such a mouthful.
I love that journey for you. And I'm Lauren Good. I'm a senior writer at Wired.
We are also joined this week by Wired Senior Reviews editor Julian Chokatu. Julian, welcome back.
Thank you for having me. Hello.
Julian's here.
Last time you were on the show, we were in a hotel room.
That is true. We cramped on some beds and some couches.
At CES, the CES show. Okay. Go back a few weeks and you can listen to it. But Julian, I can't help but notice that you are joining us this week on a regular video call on your computer and that you are not wearing a big VR headset.
That is very true. Very astute observation.
All right. Well, on this week's show, we are going to be talking about the Apple Vision Pro. Apple's first mixed reality device will be out tomorrow, February 2, Groundhog Day. If you were able to pre-order one last week, or if you're currently listening to the show while sitting on the sidewalk in front of an Apple store in your city, and you've got a cool $3,500 burning a hole in your pocket,
plus tax,
plus prescription lenses, then you are just about ready to strap in. Apple is taking a big step into a small market, and experts have noted that the Vision Pro is a bit of a gamble for the company. We will talk more about the VR market and where Apple fits in during the second half of the show. But first, we have to talk about what it's actually like to use it. So over the past couple of weeks, Lauren and Julian, you were both invited by Apple to try the headset on and take it for a spin in 2024. Julian, let's start with you. What was your initial experience like?
It was good, I think, overall, in the sense that it felt like a very polished product. And for a VR headset, or I guess a mixed reality headset, it was surprisingly something that I just felt like I could probably see myself using in some very limited ways. I think what impressed me the most was the eye tracking, and also probably creeped me out the most, but also the hand gestures that you could use to control the interface. So with the Vision Pro, when you put it on, you can basically look somewhere on the screen, and that's how you trigger or how you would then tap your two fingers to click on something, very much like a mouse. But here, there's no controller or anything like that. You're just using your hands and your eyes. So the way that you interact with everything, like scrolling a web page, you're basically pinching and zooming and moving your hand across all sorts of different directions in the space around you. And it actually worked fairly well. Again, this was a very limited 30-minute demo, so I don't know how it would react to in low light conditions, for example. But overall, I think that was sort of the standout, where it just felt very futuristic because I'm just using my eyes and my fingers to navigate an imaginary or virtual operating system.
Julian, would you buy one yourself?
Not at $3,500. I think my wife would kill me.
Lauren, what did you think of the eye tracking and the gesture, the pinching?
The eye tracking is pretty cool. It's this telltale feature because as you move your eyes around and you look at a thumbnail, like let's say you open the Apple TV app, which was something that was a part of my very tightly controlled demos. I've had two at this point. Wherever your eyes focus, that thumbnail just kind of pops up, right? Or let's say that you want to bring up a menu. You sort of look to the left of the virtual environment in front of you. Or if you want to like swipe, like page through something, you might look to the bottom of the application and then like a little scroll bar appears. I'm not describing this. It's like very hard to describe this product talking about it in audio form, yeah. Old-fashioned podcasting. And then you just like, so your eye like latches on to something. Your gaze latches onto something. And then from there, you use the finger swiping to like actually do the thing you want to do. The gesture control, while pretty precise, I found to be a little bit uncomfortable. Apple very specifically told me to put my left hand by my left thigh. I am right hand dominant. And I guess the face computer will pick up on any like gesturing or movement that you're going to do with your left hand. So the left hand goes on the side. The right hand, they said, rest your forearm on your thigh. Don't feel like you have to put your arm in the air, which I'm guessing is because Apple has said like they don't want people to be fatigued. Like even when they've justified not making a touchscreen MacBook, they have said, you know, we don't think that would just fatigue your arm.
Right.
So like you're supposed to rest your arm on, I'm doing it now, on your right thigh, and then just like pinch your fingers together. I couldn't comfortably do that. Like it's a very, if anyone who's listening right now, just do this thing where you sit back in a chair, could be a desk chair, could be your couch. Mike's doing it now, he's straightening up, and try to put your forearm rested on your thigh. If you have maybe a shorter torso, you might be able to do this. I can't do it. Can you do it? Are you resting comfortably? I'm like hunched over.
Yeah, you are.
I'm like,
you look uncomfortable. You look like you're reaching.
Very uncomfortable. So I have to do a thing where my arm is kind of in the air, floating in the air to like use the pinch control. It was fine for the half hour demo that I did it. I could see it getting tiring over time. That said, to Julian's point, this is all very, very impressive technology. Out of the gate, just feels extremely awkward. We should also note that Wired has not yet published a full review of these products. The first round of reviews were out this week. There are a select number of journalists who have spent, and YouTubers who have spent like hours with this thing. We haven't had that experience yet. So right. We can't really comment on it.
You both got to try it back in June.
Yeah.
And then,
yes.
And then
right,
you tried it.
It was June that we tried it, WWDC.
Yeah, I think it was just you in June. And then my first experience was in January, where Lauren also got that secondary experience.
Yeah. Okay. And Julian tried it in New York City, where he was able to walk around and hang out in coffee shops like a nerd with it on your face. Right, Julian?
No, I was still in a very, very, very controlled demo, which I wish that would be fun. I wish I could have left that and just walked around New York with Vision Pro and definitely not get mugged.
Yeah, definitely not. Okay, so I wear prescription glasses. And I know that there's special consideration inside the headset for people who wear prescription glasses, right?
No, sorry. You can't get a Vision Pro.
I'm not allowed. You're just boxed out.
No, Apple has thought of that. Jillian, do you want to say more?
Yeah, I basically had to give Apple my prescription. And there's a similar function that'll work when you're just ordering off of Apple's website. You provide your prescription. And then they have a partnership with Zeiss where they're making these little magnetic inserts, I think, that pop right into the Vision Pro headset. So once you place your order, I think for reading glasses, it's like $99. And then for prescription, it's $150. And you just pop those into your Vision Pro and that's sort of it. And it worked perfectly. I didn't have to keep my glasses on. I think it would have made it 10 times more uncomfortable if I had my glasses on. But so it was kind of a pretty seamless approach.
How comfortable was it for you in general to wear?
Yeah, I went in thinking it would be a little bit uncomfortable because historically when I've used VR headsets before, I just never wanted to wear them for more than an hour. After 30 minutes, I didn't really think of the headset in general. Like, it wasn't too tight. It wasn't too uncomfortable. The worst thing for me was there was a bit of light bleeding in through the nose area. And maybe it's just my nose is big or something. I don't know. But they did say, and you know, this was right after some journalists had already written about it and experienced and mentioned that some, you know, uncomfortability and the weight of the headset. We did spend a decent amount of time, like maybe 5-10 minutes, like adjusting the headset to like so that it fell in the right place, so that it was balanced based on my cheekbones and on my head. I think it definitely takes a little bit of time to dial that in. But I also only tried one of the types of straps, and there is another strap that's included in the box so that you can hopefully get a better fit. But at the end of the day, it's a headset. It's not going to work for everyone's head for like perfectly, I think. And that's just kind of the nature of that type of product.
What did you think, Lauren? How did it fit you?
Julian and I have very different heads.
Yes. So Julian is 6'4". You're 6'4"?
I am 6'4", yeah.
And you have a rather large head. Lauren is significantly more petite. Although not small, but you're tall.
Yeah, I appreciate everything you're saying. Totally. This is, you are correct.
And your head is smaller.
I have a narrow face.
Yes.
And what's funny to me is that Julian and I do have different heads and head sizes and face shapes. I can't believe we're talking about this in the Catch a Lot podcast, but it's true. And we both had similar experiences.
Really?
I also experienced the light bleed underneath the bottom rim of the Vision Pro. And also experienced after a half hour or so some discomfort because of the weight of the headset kind of resting at my cheekbone area. And then afterwards, one of the Apple public relations representatives said, oh, how about this strap? And then I tried the second set of straps, which the second one that has the top strap kind of just gives you like a little bit of the slightest bit of support or angling of the face computer, so it's not resting quite so heavily on your cheeks. And that felt a little bit better, but once again didn't get to try it for an extended period of time.
Okay.
The top strap annoying for you? Because that one goes like directly over your head too, right?
Yeah, no, it wasn't. I mean, it's funny because I read Nilay Patel's review in The Verge, and one of the things, in addition to it being a multi-thousand word very thorough review, he makes a couple references to his hair. Is this going to mess up my hair? I don't care. I'm like, even on a good day, I'm like, oh, my hair is kind of a mess, whatever. No, it didn't. The top strap didn't bother my head, nor did I care if it like kind of ruffled my hair a little bit. So that wasn't a concern. It's a hefty device. Yeah. And there's a lot of talk about how this is potentially just a first generation device. And Apple is concurrently working on something that's smaller and lightweight. And this isn't the end vision. This is the initial vision.
Sure.
No pun intended. But if we're just talking about this product as it is now, if we are telling our listeners and our friends like whether or not they should spend $3,500 to $3,800 on this now, these are the factors you have to consider.
Right. One other big factor, which is something I want to talk about before we take a break, is the apps that you saw in your demo. What were the apps? You mentioned watching something on Apple TV.
Yeah, we should give a shout out to our producer, the excellent Boone Ashworth, she who wrote a great story on Wired.com this week about the apps that are and are not available on the Apple Vision Pro. The ones I saw were a lot of the native apps. Browsed Safari, browsed, quote unquote, like, you know, put in like Wired.com using the virtual keyboard and checked out how that looked. And then
uncomfortably pinched in, to Zoom.
Read Boone's story. No, I actually didn't get the chance to do that. But Apple TV. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Saw some videos in Apple TV. Disney Plus, mm-hmm. which was cool. The Photos app.
Did you try the mindfulness app? I think it was the sort of meditation demo.
I may have tried that one in June. Did you try that one?
Yeah, I of a lot of the experiences for me were also native, except for like one or two of those interactive dinosaur videos where there's like dinosaurs that show up on the screen and they actually see where you're standing in the room. There was like one or two third-party apps, but the mindfulness app, which is the same that you can find on your Apple Watch, for example, I thought was a pretty good showcase of how you can use something like that in a VR space, because it feels much more meditative than like using it on an Apple Watch, for example. Puts you in that headspace right there, blocks out everything around you, puts some nice music on, and even if it was a minute of meditation, it actually was quite nice. So
yeah, the positioning of this is interesting. Because right now it's not clearly defined what this is really for. I mean, Apple has touted some of the productivity apps. Like, the idea is that the workspace in front of you could theoretically be limitless, right? You just have all this space around you to put as many windows as you want or need in order to work effectively. Sure, that's one positioning of it. I think this really shines as an entertainment device. Mm. I think during my demos, that was the only time I ever felt any sense of, like, real emotion or excitement was looking at rich media or movie trailers, just being sort of immersed in that world. That was pretty cool. What's interesting about that, though, is that there are some pretty big media services that have declined to work with this. And that is, let's see, Netflix, right? YouTube, yeah. Not optimized for this. Spotify. Although, I mean, when I think of listening to Spotify, it's like, just put it on my Sonos and walk around the house.
Maybe,
right? Why would I?
Maybe you can hang out with your AI DJ in VR.
Maybe. Listen to your favorite pod and a face computer. I don't know. But and maybe that'll change over time, right? Because this would not be the first Apple product where we've seen the hardware launch before the app ecosystem is totally in place. But considering that, I think that this has a good chance as an entertainment device. Kind of surprised to see some of the entertainment makers not playing nice with Apple on this.
We'll put a pin in that because we're going to talk about apps in the second half. So let's take a break and we'll come right back.
This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Each episode features insight you won't find anywhere else from the center of the conversation surrounding emerging technologies like AI. Right now on the podcast, you can hear a special episode where Brad Smith lays out Microsoft's vision for a vibrant marketplace driving the new AI economy. To hear more, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the reviews director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, Jay Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.
So with the Vision Pro, Apple is entering the VR market very late. Meta and Sony and Microsoft all have a years-long head start over Apple, and compared to what those headsets can do and what sorts of experiences are available for them, the Vision Pro does not have a lot of apps. It's also way more expensive. So Lauren, I know you've thought a lot about this, so I want to ask you, is Apple taking a big risk here?
Yes. It's interesting that you said Apple's late to this because they're either late or they're early, which is to say that, yes, other people have developed this before. Virtual reality has been a pie in the sky idea, this ideal of computing for, what, 30 years, maybe more? Actually, more, because we're old. Good Lord. But Apple may be early to this idea of spatial computing and AR and mixed reality and pass-through technology that means that you are not fully enveloped, even though you've got a thing on your face, and we've talked about some of the discomforting parts of that, that you're actually, you do see the real world in addition to the virtual world. Apple may also be early to this level of granular gesture controls. They may help build a new app ecosystem for immersive video, 3D video content for it. You know, there are some comparisons being made to the first iPhone, the Apple Watch launching without a clear use case, and then it becoming clear that it was ideal for fitness. I think a little bit about the iPad, honestly, and not just because iPad apps are being converted into Vision Pro apps with, you know, supposedly the checking of a box. I think about the iPad because it's funny, in my Facebook memories the other day on January 27th, this memory popped up of me sitting at my desk in a former newsroom, holding like a 10-inch piece of cardboard to my face. It was the day that the iPad was announced, January 27th, 2010. And I didn't have an iPad. I mean, it wasn't granted like an early access unit or anything. But I had a piece of cardboard at my desk that was approximately that size. And someone took a photo of me holding it up to the side of my face, pretending to make a phone call on it. And the joke was, are we really going to be making phone calls with these giant tablets? By the way, Apple was not first to tablets either.
Right.
Those had been attempted before too. And what we learned, like, pretty quickly, and which I eventually came around to because I didn't really have an iPad for a while. And then eventually I was like, oh, I like the iPad a lot, is that it was a new type of interaction and a new type of computing that we just couldn't really imagine because we had the phone before. And so part of me wonders if there's a little bit of resistance to this because it is a new type of computing and we're picturing all the things that we can currently do on our phone or our Mac or our iPad or whatever and saying like, well, it doesn't exactly translate here, right?
Right.
And I think that could be true. So I think it is true that we are perhaps not ready for this type of spatial computing and that Apple has done a good job in making a convincing case for it. And it is also true that Apple is taking a huge, huge risk because asking people to put a computer on, I think, one of the most personal and sensitive parts of your body is just like, it's a big bet.
Right, right. There is a cultural resistance to face computers that
Correct.
We have seen.
Correct. And this is a very philosophical argument, but I think we're at a time in our lifetimes when you start to think about that third space. There have been articles written about this, right? You have work or school, and then you have home. And then what's that third space that people are supposed to go to establish a sense of community?
Oh,
right. Aside from like flopping on your couch and watching Netflix mindlessly at night, right? Like it used to be church. It used to be gyms. It used to be like, and in the pandemic really forced a reckoning around that. Like, where do we go to find community? And establishing community, I think it's really important for people. And especially when your head's down on a computer all day long.
Yeah.
So for me, like wanting to wrap my face in something else that isolates me or cuts me off from the world isn't super appealing unless it actually does effectively supplant some of the screen time I already have.
Right. Like maybe you'll spend less time on your phone if you spend more time hanging out with your friends in Vision Pro.
Maybe. And maybe that's a paradigm that we just can't envision yet because we're so addicted to our phones.
Right. Well, that's interesting.
What do you think?
Everything you said just resonated with me because I do feel like we don't really think about these things. They're handed to us, they're accepted into our lives, and then they just become part of us and we don't really think about them. And it's hard for us to stop and look at a face computer and say, okay, how does this fit into my life? If there's nothing compelling about it that is anything different than what we already know. So I do think that, like, okay, I think this device is a development kit, right? It's way too expensive for normal people. So the people who are buying it are people who are really interested in what it's going to be. And that's consumers and developers, right? So developers are going to start thinking about it differently once they try it. They're going to start making apps that this is going to allow that other headsets do not allow, given the mixed reality controls you talked about and the ability for presence in physical space and presence in virtual space. I think there's going to be all kinds of great apps. When those come, this device will just become another one of those things that is handed to us and we are told how to use it. You know what I mean?
Hmm. Like we're told how to use it because the apps dictate that, or because the UI is so intuitive that we figure it out, or because Apple is telling us how to use it.
I think all three, but primarily the first one. The fact that, like, the reason that you get an iPhone is because of the camera and photo sharing on social media. Maybe, right? Like, that's a reason why a lot of people want a phone. Or they want a phone because of social pressure, because that's where all their friends are hanging out. What if all your friends are hanging out in some VR world in 5 years? Then it's like you have to get one of these headsets to get into the VR world, right?
Right, right. Yeah, like maybe 30 years ago, we would have looked at gamers who sat there all night long with a little headset on talking to their friends through a virtual game and said, like, wow, that's a time suck. But it's actually an incredibly important social experience.
It is. Julian, what do you think about whether or not developers are going to latch onto this?
Well, it's weird because Vision Pro feels like something that Apple has been leading up to over the past couple of years. Like just the way with starting with the introduction of the M1 and Apple Silicon, the whole idea was now you can use iPhone apps on a Mac. And the way they've changed that design language over the past few years, where they're making it so that one app sort of adapts to your phone, and then on an iPad with iPad OS, it now adapts to the shape of an iPad, and then that is now available on a Mac, and that adapts to more desktop orientation. But it feels like all of this was meant for Vision OS, where you're now able to resize your apps and it can take the form of an iPhone app, it can take the form of an iPad app, or a Mac app in a desktop environment. And so it feels like Apple has subtly maybe been pushing this idea and developers have been either taking advantage of that and building for it. So I do think from the developer side, there's going to be heavy interest, not only because they've partially already there and maybe it is as simple as checking off a box because of part all of this work, but also, I mean, in general, like over the past 2 years, I've seen like an insane amount of interest in getting face computers off like through AR glasses. And even at CES, I tried like a demo version. Mike saw me sitting there and so did a lot of people at CES, just watched me in the media room using this thing called the Nemo Planet, which is like a little tiny computer that I plugged into some AR glasses. And I was typing away in like a Chromium desktop browser with no one could see what I was staring at, but I was looking at a couple of different screens. And there's so many companies now that are doing this type of thing, TCL, Xreal, like there's just so many companies doing this that I think everyone is trying to beat everyone else to the punch. And it's just, this is sort of the ideal form of what maybe Vision Pro is in the future from a computing standpoint in terms of like using it for work. But I think Apple is more ready perhaps for the entertainment aspect of it, because that is also in some ways easier.
Yeah.
You just slap some fun content on and it looks great. Great. But the computing aspect is a little trickier because now I have to carry a keyboard or a mouse and how do you interact with it? But I think that, yeah, they've done some really good and interesting things to make it work in the Vision Pro from what we've seen so far. But I don't know if I'm going to want to wear a Vision Pro in a coffee shop. That's just kind of strange.
Yeah, the eyesight thing is interesting because I wasn't able to see what my eyes look like in eyesight. And Julian, I don't think you were in your demo either, right? But the reviewers who got to take it home and spend time with it, they've been sharing photos this week of what their eyesight looks like, which is like a virtual rendering of what your eyes would look like if, let's say, you're sitting on the couch wearing the Apple Vision Pro and your spouse comes in and looks at you. The idea is they'd be able to see your eyes, but it's not. You realize it's a visual rendering of your eyes and they look funny.
Yes, it does look very funny. But I think that eyesight ties into what Julian has been getting at, which is that like the Vision Pro as it exists now is not the thing. It's the thing that's going to get us to the thing, right? Like in, you know, 5 or 10 years, it's going to be a headset that is very comfortable to wear, that is not crazy expensive, that disappears more. And with this, you can see Apple trying to make it disappear, right? Eyesight is an attempt to make the technology disappear and make it look as though you're just wearing a set of ski goggles. You're not wearing a $4,000 computer on your head, you know? Also with the FaceTime avatars, like we've seen screenshots of people doing FaceTime and, you know, it's a digital representation of you wearing no headset, but like your head floating in space, talking to your friend's head, also not wearing a headset, floating in space. So they removed the headset so that you can talk to each other face to face with these creepy 3D avatars.
Yes.
Right.
You just made me think of what the title of this episode should be.
What is it?
Apple's Uncanny Valley Pro.
I like it. Well, there's also your favorite topic, the battery pack, right?
Like, oh, yeah. Julian. Let's go to Julian first.
Well,
tell us about this battery pack.
The point is that, you know, Apple is making it very hard for you to notice the battery pack in its marketing around the thing, right? Like they're just not showing it in photos. They're not showing it in the demo videos. But yeah, it's an actual real battery pack.
Yeah, put it in your pocket when you get up and walk around. Well, what if your pants don't have pockets? I don't know. There's a lot of weird parts of the battery. Like it makes sense for where the technology is right now. And obviously I don't think there was just any way around it because I would much rather have a battery in my pocket than like strapped to the back of my head and potentially acting as like a head warmer. It's just also so unlike Apple, it felt, to make such a sacrifice in that way. Like it felt like the type of thing that, you know, Samsung would come out with a headset and they'd have a battery pack hanging off the thing. And then in 5 years, Apple would come out with a headset that didn't have that. And that's now Apple, everyone is like, wow, look what Apple did. And that's also kind of what I feel about Vision Pro when compared to some of these other existing headsets. It's like, it does seem like Apple might be late to the game, but also Apple has that very annoying ability to just make a product suddenly popular and like the thing that everyone wants. It's very annoying, but I think a lot of people that are going to buy it, and there's going to be a lot of interest in it because it's just Apple doing it, and they're going to say, yeah, I want that. That looks cool. Well, I have to get it. It's just the new Apple thing, right?
Yep.
I mean, we should address the elephant in the room, though, the big blue elephant in the room, which is the Meta Quest. I mean, the Meta Quest also, and the Meta Quest Pro, which is their more advanced model, also doesn't have an external battery pack. It's on your head. It's in the face computer.
Yeah.
And that's actually been a pretty popular device in the VR AR market, right? By some estimates, they've sold more than 20 million units of the Meta Quest since it launched. The first unit was, I think, just full VR. Then they started to do pass-through video as well so that you can see some of the real world around you when you're using it. That's the one I've used the most. I've used the Meta Quest 2 a fair amount, and like it's pretty good.
Right.
They now have the Meta Quest 3, the Pro, which is more expensive.
And the 3 has better pass-through video, right?
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. It also has hand controllers.
Oh, okay.
So they're not doing gesture control. I'm sure they're working
amateurs
on it. I mean, they have a whole R&D lab that's dedicated to this. So yeah, Apple could popularize this on another level. The technology is in some ways much more advanced, but they wouldn't be the first manufacturer to sell millions of units of this type of computing device.
That's right.
I do want to also touch on back when you were talking about like the companies sort of like pushing this and us accepting it. One thing I was thinking about was with eyesight, like I understand their intent of like when someone looks at you when you're wearing the headset, like now you can see their eyes and how they're emoting. But at the same time, why couldn't we just make it so that like when someone looked at you, they just saw you wearing the headset and like you could just take it off if they wanted to ask you a question and you wanted to talk to them? Like why go so far as to make it like all these production like marketing materials that they have like of a person wearing the Vision Pro talking to someone next to them on the couch? who doesn't have one on. Like, that was the part that I think that just irked me the most, because it's this sort of idea that, like, you could just leave it on and we've handled everything else for you. But you could have also just not had that feature and it would have been one step less creepy.
Yeah.
And it just was seemed very unnecessary, all this like work to get that sort of effect. But yeah, that was just a little odd to me.
That's a very good point. It's very Apple to, you know, control the experience as much as possible. But, you know, nothing new under the sun. So I guess we'll wait and see on Apple Vision Pro.
Watch this space.
Watch this space with your creepy eyes. This has been a great conversation, but we'd still have to take care of recommendations. So please stick around. We'll be right back.
Hey everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
Okay, Julian, as our guest, you get to go first. What is your recommendation?
I am recommending an app called Thumbtack. And I have been using this app for the past few months now that I am, and this is again very weird to say, a homeowner. I have a lot of really random tasks that I need help with, things like changing electrical stuff, adding outlets. I don't want to really touch wires and electrical components in a home. So I found out that there's this app that you could use to look for pros in your area, like handymen or electricians or whoever. And you just kind of look for whatever you want. And there's a bunch of recommendations that usually come up, a lot of reviews from people in the area. And you can sometimes see pricing details or just talk to the person and get a quote. It's just a very, very nice way of lowering that sort of overwhelming barrier to like, oh crap, something's wrong in my house. I need to fix it, but I don't want to mess things up and do it myself. I try to do a bit of that, but, you know, at a certain point, I'm not going to, you know, replace an outlet. I just don't really feel comfortable doing that. Maybe one day, but this is a really great app that's been kind of helpful for me the past couple of months. It's very, very slick. And I just was surprised that it was such a common thing that had lots of people on it too. So it's not like just one handyman in your area. It's a lot. I'm also in New York, so maybe that's a part of it. But
how does it compare to TaskRabbit?
So I've actually never used TaskRabbit. So I'm sure there's some cross-pollination with some types of tasks being available on TaskRabbit, but this is definitely the place to go for like more home-focused stuff, where I assume TaskRabbit has random odd jobs like rewrite my resume or whatever, something like that.
And is this a web platform, or is it like an iOS app or an Android
app? I think it's, yeah, you can use it on the website. I think I predominantly use it on the Android app, but there's an iPhone app, very easy to use. Just search, you know, I had to move a washer dryer the other day and I searched for washer dryer and people came up that knew how to touch a washer dryer, I guess, or operate one. So they helped out. It was great.
Is it available as a Vision Pro app?
Yeah.
That's what I want to know. Can you sit there on your couch watching Avatar?
I'll have to get back to you on that.
Through Safari, yes. Julian, you're really like, you're not doing anything to bolster your reputation as somebody who like writes about technology for a living. I'm just saying.
You know what? Now that you say that, Vision Pro-ing and having like pass-through video where I can get guidance on how to switch out some plugs or whatever, that seems like the kind of useful thing that I could use it for.
There you go. Thumbtack killer right there. All right. That's a good recommendation. Thank you. And congratulations on now having a giant home that you have to hire people to take care of for you.
Congrats.
Thank you.
Lauren, what is your recommendation?
Visit Julianne's house. My recommendation, shout out to our old buddy Galad, who once made a very simplistic food recommendation, and it just really resonated. Butter lettuce.
Butter lettuce.
Butter lettuce.
Is this lettuce with butter on it?
No. It is a type of leaf lettuce. Those of you who work at Wired who are listening to this podcast, all 20 of you, will know that I have a significant fear of arugula.
Mm-hmm.
It's a death trap.
Mm-hmm.
It's, what is that lettuce? Is it a lettuce?
It's the devil's lettuce.
It's the devil's lettuce. Now, I'm going to get all kinds of hate mail from people who love arugula, chefs, normies, whatever. I understand it's one of the more nutritious leaves out there. It's really more like a vine or something, scrap, a weed.
Okay, let's stop.
Stop
disparaging all right, arugula.
But butter lettuce, it is so, it's so light, it's mild, it's tender. It's perfect for salads or sandwiches. It's perfect as a garnish. It's got a great color. You can mince it. I've been making some delightful winter salads lately with butter lettuce and radicchio and shallots and a little, like maybe a little bit of gorgonzola cheese if you're not a vegan. I'm looking at you, Mike. There's I have to mention it every episode.
No comment.
You can, you know what? You can use some vegan Parmesan cheese.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Nutty and delightful, like this show. Anyway. I have the giggles. Butter lettuce. That's it.
Okay.
Wait. So this looks tiny compared to like normal lettuce.
It's like,
no, it comes in this like as this giant head with like the root attached.
Yeah, it's like, you know, the size of like maybe a grapefruit.
A little bigger. It's like the size of the head you need to wear the Apple Vision Pro. All right, no, it's like a baby's head.
Nice.
I'd say.
Yeah.
Julianne, try it and let me know what you think. Very curious. I'll
look for it. I also didn't know your stance on arugula, which was just very enlightening.
If you were here in the San Francisco office, you would see that whenever we get food that has arugula in it, I'm like, I put out the warning on Slack.
Yep.
Is it the taste or?
It's a little bitter, but it's mostly the texture. It's like this to me, like. We can go on forever. No matter how much you chew it, how much you masticate it, which sounds dirty, but it's not. It just feels stringy and like you're going to choke on it.
Her hatred for arugula is the only thing that she talks about with more frequency than my dietary restrictions. I'm just saying.
Okay. Butter lettuce is where it's at. Mike, I would like to hear your recommendation now.
Okay, I'm going to recommend a television show.
Okay.
It's an ITV show, which is the British network, and you can watch it on BritBox, which is how I watched it. It's called Shetland.
And okay. It's is that named a pony?
Yes, Shetland of the ponies.
Mm-hmm.
It's a chain of islands in far northern Scotland. It's almost to Norway. It's way up there. So it's remote. And the show it's a cop show. It's one of those like British, you know, detective inspector and detective constable, chief inspector, blah, blah, blah shows. And it's very good. I never really got into like the British inspector shows before. I think like Midsummer Murders was the only one that I had previously watched. But Shetland is remarkably well written. It's also very well acted. It does not fall into like the tropes and the stereotypes that are very common of these shows. It's also just delightful to watch a cop show where there's like no guns. So, I mean, yes, there is murder, but you know, the cops aren't running around pointing guns at people. It's also
the old fashioned way. They put a bunch of ether in a cloth and then put it against people's faces.
No, they walk up to them and they say, you're under arrest. Oh, you need to come with me. Okay. And the person goes, okay. And they get in the back of the car.
They don't have like consumption and they're walking by the sea and experiencing the vapors. And
there is a lot of walking by the sea.
There is. Okay.
I looked at the trailer and I saw the sea a lot.
Yes. The scenery is gorgeous.
Oh, okay.
Because the whole show is shot in the rural parts of Shetland, as well as like in the cute little town that they have there. Lerwick. I'm going to get
assassinated for pronouncing it incorrectly, but it's one of the things that makes the show enjoyable. And I will say, I have watched, there are 8 seasons, I've watched 7 of them, not one goddamn pony.
Really?
No ponies.
Gosh, what a disappointment.
A lot of scotch, like a lot of whiskey, a lot of kilts, a lot of left-hand side driving.
How are the accents?
Brilliant.
Oh, love it.
Absolutely amazing. My favorite thing about the accents is that, like, Scottish people don't say little, they just say we. So,
oh, okay.
A wee chat.
I thought you were going to say little.
No, no, it's we.
English.
We. Yeah. A wee chat. Wee. Your wee kilt. Mm-hmm. Who's your wee sister? It's great. Anyway, Shetland. Yeah, stream it on BritBox, which is one of the better deals if you like British programming.
Yeah, I think this is the second or third time you've recommended BritBox, and I'm sufficiently intrigued.
Yes, yes, you should be. It's very good.
Excellent recommendation. Thank you for that.
Thank you. All right. And with that, our show is over. Thank you both for being here and talking about face computing and Apple's place in that environment.
Yeah. Thanks to Julian for joining us. That was really fun.
Yeah. And thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And thank you all for listening. If you have feedback, you can endorse all of us on LinkedIn. Just check the show notes. Our producer is Boone Ashworth, and we will be back with a new show next week. Until then, goodbye.
Is there LinkedIn on the Apple Vision Pro? I endorse you for eyesight.
Hackers and cyber criminals have always held this kind of special fascination.
Obviously, I can't tell you too much about what I do.
It's a game. Who's the best hacker? And I was like, well, this is child's play.
I'm Dina Temple-Raston. And on the Click Here podcast, you'll meet them and the people trying to stop them.
We're not afraid of the attack. We're afraid of the creativity and the intelligence of the human being behind it.
Click here. Stories about the people making and breaking our digital world.
AI machine.
Satellite. Engine ignition.
Click here.
And liftoff.
Click here. Every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
From PRX.